Please the Court, my name is Tom Hoytel. I'm here on behalf of Appellant Brandon Peete. I represented him in the district court as well. We've raised a number of issues in this case. This is a very serious case, involves a sentence, as opposed to the first case the court heard. This does involve a sentence of life imprisonment without possibility of parole. So we've raised a number of issues in this case for reversal. In the limited time that I have, let me see if I can address the issue of the insidious way in which the Federal Juvenile Delinquency Act is circumvented in Arizona on the Indian reservations. This is the situation that was presented in
the... Can I suggest that I would like to hear argument as to that issue and as to the Adult Speedy Trial Act issue in particular? Right. And you may have a little extra time, perhaps, and we'll spend a lot.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you. This situation was presented in the case in 1988, I believe it was, United States versus Doe, which went in bank in this court, 6-5 decision in this court, that some sort of working arrangement or conspiracy between tribal agents and federal agents must be found before tribal custody will be deemed to be federal custody. And this issue.
Let me ask you about that. It wasn't clear to me whether the standard is in the alternative or not. The paragraph, as I recall, said something like there wouldn't be federal. There could be federal custody if the federal government ordered custody or there's some other language there. And then there's another sentence that says, you know, if they collaborated to deny in bad faith, essentially. Is it your understanding that collaboration in bad faith or the motive matters?
Well, it's
or has to be proven?
Well, Judge Hawkins referred to this burden as the Sisyphean burden to prove some sort of collaboration between the tribal and federal officers. Obviously, we believe he was correct on that because it isn't.
You're not talking about the recent Doe case, then. You're talking about the older Doe case.
The old Doe case. That's correct, Your Honor. The 155 Fed 3rd, right. 1070. Okay. That's Judge Hawkins in his dissent referred to it as the burden being too high. It's hard to say from the opinion whether some sort of bad faith motive is necessary. I believe the district court sort of assumed that was the situation, that some sort of motive, bad faith motive, was necessary. But our position in this case is that we don't need to get to that issue because the facts are so much different than what were presented in Doe. In Doe, you had an arrest strictly by tribal officers, allegedly on tribal offenses, that then the FBI becomes involved after that. This is a different situation where the FBI was involved from the beginning of this case. I believe August 20th is when Hosky James makes statements to the tribal police officers. August 21st, the FBI agent is present on the reservation, questioning Hosky James, the co-defendant, questioning Urban Sepai, the co-defendant, taking statements from them. They are arrested on tribal charges immediately after those statements. And on August 22nd, Agent Manns from the FBI and Tribal Investigator Charlie go out to find Brandon Peete, and they find him, of course, intoxicated. This is a different situation where the FBI is involved in investigating federal criminal offenses from the beginning.
Investigating. Wasn't Agent Mann actually, didn't he actually arrest him at his house and put him in the car?
That's correct. That's correct. He was there.
Physically arrested him.
When arresting him, yes, and he alleged.
He was just there, but he did it. My understanding is
he did it. That's correct. He was there with Investigator Charlie. He was the one who grabbed him and put him in handcuffs and put him inside the car that they had at that time. Took him back to the adult detention facility in Chinle for some reason. And this case is so much different. This case is more akin to two cases that were distinguished in the Doe opinion, United States versus DeMarce and United States versus Jackson, both Eighth Circuit cases, where the Eighth Circuit said, because federal officers were involved in the arrest, we're going to find this federal custody, even though these particular defendants were held, and in the DeMarce case, for example, it was a juvenile. The juvenile was held in tribal custody,
but then,
in state custody in
here, the charges were actually filed by the tribe. The first set of charges were filed after the interrogation on the murder, is that right?
They
originally were simply on public intoxication and making threats, right?
Right. But the investigator Charlie testified that she went to talk to the tribal prosecutor, and the tribal prosecutor told her that Brandon Pete wouldn't likely be held in custody on those charges, and so then the charges of homicide and sexual assault were added.
But was that sequential? Was that after a while or immediately?
Well, according to her report, according to district court's findings, it was the next day. One happened
with regard to the homicide. Another thing I couldn't understand from the briefs is homicide prosecuted under tribal law at all?
Well, they have a section that deals with that. It's my understanding. I'm certainly not an expert on tribal law, but they have a section that deals with that. But of course, the tribe generally defers to federal prosecution when you're dealing with murder.
But it is possible because the Major
Crimes Act. There is a section.
The Major Crimes Act does not make exclusive jurisdiction.
Well, there is a section that allows for some type of prosecution under tribal code, from what my understanding is. But I've never seen one go through a prosecution. If there's a homicide involved, it would go by federal prosecution, not by tribal prosecution.
So what do we do? I mean, with the fact that we have a finding by the district court, we have the Doe cases, we have, I would say, a healthy suspicion that this is a strange story, that the federal FBI didn't care whether this confessed murderer was kept in custody or let out. I mean, that's basically the story that the judge had to believe that they were indifferent about this. Or is that not so? Is it sufficient?
No, I believe that's accurate, Your Honor. That's accurate.
Or is the other way to construe the case law that it's not that they had to be indifferent, but as long as they already knew he was already in custody, then, they could just walk away from it?
Well, my position, of course, is this was calculated because this is what they did with the other defendants.
Okay, but we have a finding by the district court. What do we do with it? That's what I'm asking you.
Well, in the Doe case, for example, it's de novo review on the voluntariness of the Miranda waiver and the following.
That's a different issue, but what about on this?
Well, in the Doe case, for example, it came up just the opposite. There was a suppression by the district court, finding the voluntariness of the Miranda waiver involuntary, and this court reversed that.
Yes, but as to the question of whether this was federal or state custody, do we have anything other than clear error review?
Well, yes, you have the review under DeMarce and Jackson that this is a different situation from Doe, because the federal officers were involved in the actual, a federal officer, Agent Manns, was involved in the actual arrest.
Okay, let me
ask you. Which Doe said, that's a different situation that we're not dealing with here. So the court can reverse on a de novo standard based on the law not being properly interpreted by the district court, because the district court.
In those cases, the BIA actually arrested and charged and put the person in custody, right? And
that's correct.
Essentially what they were holding was the BIA is the federal government, it's not a tribal.
That's correct.
Whereas here, it's stickier than that. All right, two other questions on different issues.
Well, remember, Your Honor, the tribal officer, Investigator Charlie, testified that she was the tribal officer assigned to assist the FBI in federal criminal
crimes.
Offenses.
I understand that.
Yes. Making it much closer to
that's an interesting point, actually.
That's at ER 162.
To change the subject a little. With regard to the Speedy Trial Act issues, The Speedy Trial Act problem turns on what we do with the time that the cert petition either was pending or could have been pending, right?
Yeah. Well, it could. My argument is there's still a speedy trial violation even if you exclude the time between the filing of the cert petition and the filing of the superseding indictment.
Well, that's why I said it could have been pending. But what? But in fact, the government proceeded during that period. And don't, I mean, doesn't the whole Speedy Trial Act, and of course they were able to because the mandate had issued. And the case
That's
was
correct.
Back in the district court.
That's correct.
So why isn't that simply determinative by itself, that there wasn't any delay caused by this because, in fact, they proceeded. They didn't delay.
Well, that was my argument, that there was no delay caused by the filing of the cert petition because the mandate had issued and this court had denied the motion to recall the mandate. So there was no problem with the proceeding in the district.
And they
which
did.
Which, in fact, they did.
And they did.
Which, in fact, they did when they obtained the indictment on March 30th.
And they could have done it earlier. They certainly could have done it before the cert petition was filed. And actually they did it while the cert petition was pending.
That's correct. That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
What about that problem? I don't understand how you can say that there was any delay caused by the filing or the non-filing of the cert petition. When the mandate issued, you were free to proceed in district court, and you did.
Your Honor, may it please the Court, I'm Vincent Kirby, trial counsel below. The situation is this, Your Honor. This is a juvenile matter, and I will tell the court what we relied upon. We relied upon the defendant's affidavit in seeking a recall of the mandate that the petition of writ was filed for delay, not merely for delay, but vindicate the defendant appellant's juvenile rights under the FJDA, the Juvenile Delinquency Act. The issue for the government is that this is not the normal course where the court is asked to make a decision in an adult case and makes it and issues a mandate and time goes on. This is an issue where a juvenile was transferred, appealed, the very jurisdiction to be tried as an adult.
Okay.
At what point do we continue to treat him as a juvenile? Because, in the brief, if the government...
Well, this court decided that he shouldn't be tried, he didn't need to be tried as a juvenile, and didn't stay the mandate, and you were free to go ahead and treat him as an adult, and you did.
But, and it's correct, Your Honor, but the issue is this.
So how did this cause any delay? That's what I'm not getting.
The delay that was caused was twofold. One is that he was seeking from this court on a recall of the mandate.
Okay, let's assume that through that period.
And a petition for cert was that he was telling the court as well as the government that he did not believe the interlocutory
okay.
appeal process
but you didn't
was
wait.
Concluded.
But you understood that you could proceed, and you did proceed.
We proceeded, Your Honor, after the period of time in which to file the petition for cert passed.
Right, and he filed the petition. And you obviously weren't concerned about what the petition said because you went ahead.
Your Honor, I can't categorize it that way. The facts are the indictment came after the petition for cert was filed. The record does not contain matter, Your Honor. I can tell you I was not the appellate counsel. I was not the one to whom the petition for cert was sent.
Okay.
The fact that 2 weeks went by may well justify a conclusion that we didn't know, that I did not know about it because I'm the one who sought the indictment or the superseding indictment. There was no request for stay. There was no request to seal the matter at the initial appearance a couple of days later. So it's not that we just delayed and didn't care about it. There's an issue about whether I actually had notice as the trial counsel that the petition had been filed.
After you did it, nobody stopped you, even though the cert petition was not disposed of yet, so the cert petition couldn't have been causing anything.
But, Your Honor, because that whole process could have taken him right out of the adult domain is what caused us to hesitate. It's not the usual course of case through the process of going up. It's still an adult. It's always an adult. It's always in the public record. When you're dealing with a juvenile, if the court had recalled the mandate, we would have had to wait. If the Supreme Court had ultimately said to the Ninth Circuit, you are to review his Speedy Trial Act, and you decided he prevailed, we would have put him into the public record before we were entitled to. That's the basis for the delay. There's no.
I just have a very hard time with this because you did it. You did it. You were not, in fact, in the long run, deterred by the existence of this petition.
As I say, Your Honor, I've explained what the record shows in terms of I would not characterize that we didn't care and we did.
That it didn't cause the delay because both technically it didn't cause it because you were free to do it, and as a matter of fact it didn't cause it because you did do it. So where does the causation come from?
Your Honor, as I repeated, we were operating on the what happens if the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court grants him relief at the juvenile level and he does not get into the public domain. That's the delay. Your Honor, there was no reason for the government to delay other than that because it actually was already a standing indictment. The standing indictment against the three adults was already out there. So there's no reason to delay. There was nothing to be gained. And if you look at it, would the case have proceeded immediately upon the indictment, or would we have awaited the outcome of the in one case, if we issued it at the time of the mandate, they asked the mandate to be recalled. It took another month. What if the court had granted?
If we take all that time out, even if we go through the period that the motion to withdraw the mandate was pending, you still violated the speedy trial. Is that right?
Your Honor, the other part of our petition is we are not certain how a juvenile delinquency complaint gets automatically turned into an adult charge without more. There doesn't seem to be any basis in law or in the statutory creations to say that's what happens.
Don't you just get an order from the district court and proceed that way? That's what we used to do in state court.
That process, at least I've not seen that process in federal court.
You have to file a superseding indictment as an adult, and that's what you did.
That's what we ultimately did, after we believed the time for the petition for cert had passed and had not been filed. Your Honor, if I may.
So you're relying essentially on a mistake.
Yes.
You thought it hadn't been filed, but it was filed.
Yes. Because otherwise there was no reason for us to file it when we did. And if that was our theory, that the petition for cert on juvenile jurisdiction was pending, there was no reason for us to go ahead and indict once that petition was filed. We would have awaited the outcome of the Supreme Court's ruling. As to the court's other concern about the Doe issues, let me make sure. The juvenile was going to be interviewed by a criminal investigator and the FBI agent.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
The juvenile, when they went out on the 22nd, was going to be interviewed in connection with the missing girl case. However, in the presence of the tribal officer, the defendant was drunk, disorderly, in possession.
And also of the federal officer.
The
federal officer actually physically arrested him and put him in the car.
He physically restrained him, Investigator Charlie is the one who placed him under arrest for tribal charges.
But what does that mean?
That it was a tribal arrest.
What do you mean he's the one who – you mean at that point in when he was out of the house, it was Charlie said, I'm the one who's placing you in arrest on tribal charges?
The testimony in the record is Investigator Charlie told him that he was under arrest for public intoxication, threatening and
– At that point when they were out of the house as opposed to later on after the interrogation?
No, clearly, Your Honor, he was under tribal arrest at his house.
Mm-hmm.
That is why they took him to the tribal detention facility, not just to hold him to dry out. He was actually under tribal arrest by way of Investigator Charlie.
And it doesn't make any difference that the federal officer was there holding him down, handcuffing him, putting him in the car, and so on?
No, because there's still no federal charges. In fact, for public intoxication, the FBI agent couldn't have arrested him.
All right. The next part that bothers me is, now we have a confessed murderer. Okay, is there any other case like that? We have a confessed murderer after the interrogation.
Yes.
And we the trial judge found that although we had a confessed murderer, the federal government was just going to keep hands off about whether this confessed murderer stayed in prison or didn't. Didn't care. It had nothing to do with whether the decision to keep him in prison on tribal homicide charges just didn't care. I mean, isn't this circumstantial evidence? Wouldn't you think if this was a criminal trial that the circumstantial evidence that it's pretty likely that there was, in fact, at least a tacit understanding of how things were going to happen?
Your Honor, is there an understanding of how things may happen? They may well be, but the tribe was absolutely entitled to proceed as they did on charges in their sovereignty, in their jurisdiction. There's nothing that says the tribe can't go ahead. Whether or not there's going to be federal charges, whether everybody believes it, in the 2004 Doe case, that's exactly what happened. They started them through the process. They decided, let's hand them off to the feds. And this, the court in that case said, it doesn't matter that everybody knows it's going to be federal. But, Your Honor, in this case, it was not enough on the day that he gave that statement to arrest him. As the court can see from the record.
Well, I'm, frankly, having read an awful lot of cases about probable cause, I don't see why not. There was enough to arrest him. What, there wasn't probable cause to arrest somebody who said, I murdered somebody for murder?
There's two parts of it. There may have been probable cause to arrest him, but the question for the government is there enough to proceed to trial on August 23rd? Mm-hmm. of that year? And the answer was no.
Well, that's a different issue. But was there probable cause to arrest him? Sure, definitely.
And but the case law doesn't say that has to. If there's probable cause, we have to arrest. Doe still says that we get to make decisions on how and when to file charges. We didn't have a body. We didn't have a cause of death. We didn't have an identified victim. And if we had taken the juvenile just as he was, all we had were four co-defendants making statements. Now, in some circumstances, maybe that's enough, maybe it's not. But
I mean, it could be that because of the clear error rule, this gets by. But if I were the trial judge.
I think you have to look at the trial judge who has done an awful lot of work in Indian country and understand that this was not we don't care and we're just going to leave him off. The record is replete with buccal swabs being taken, DNA being taken, OMI being involved in it and trying to determine the cause of death with just a pile of bones. That's not an easy thing to do. Oftentimes with pile of bones, we can't say how
they
died.
Who's doing all that? The federal government?
At the request of the federal government, the case is being investigated, as it should have been before.
And Agent Charlie testified that her job was essentially to help the federal government investigate major crimes.
That's one of her jobs. Her other job is to investigate Indian crime countries in Indian country. She is a tribal police officer. She testified that she would oftentimes prosecute cases tribally that did not involve the federal government. So this was not the first time she had ever been in tribal court with a case.
Okay. Thank you very much for your argument. It's helpful.
May I just have a minute, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
Yeah. ER 162 questioned it to Investigator Charlie. And that's your primary role, is it not, to work with the FBI on federal felony offenses? Answer, yes, sir. So that was her primary position. Let me just say something about the tribal prosecutions in this case. There is no evidence in this record that the tribe ever proceeded to prosecution on any of these four defendants, all of whom were arrested on tribal charges. Brandon Pete, we know, remained in custody for 7 months on a juvenile charge and then was taken by the federal government. With respect to the speedy trial issue, the issue that went to the Supreme Court on the petition for writ of certiorari was the juvenile speedy trial issue.
Not the transfer issue?
Not the transfer. No, that was the issue that went
to the
Supreme Court
that.
Because there was a circuit conflict. The Sixth Circuit, this Court's decision explicitly noted that there was a Sixth Circuit decision contrary. That the Sixth
Presumably
Circuit,
they didn't know that before you filed, though.
Pardon me?
Presumably they didn't know that before you filed.
No, it was in the opinion. In the opinion from this Court on the transfer decision.
Oh, because we didn't decide the other because we said we didn't have jurisdiction over it.
That's right.
Theoretically, you still could have appealed that, too.
The speedy trial, the Court would not consider on the interlocutory appeal the Juvenile Speedy Trial Act issue. Right. There was a Sixth Circuit decision to the contrary that did consider the speedy trial issue on an interlocutory appeal from a juvenile transfer.
But it did decide the transfer question, right? And for all the government knew, you were going to file a petition on that.
Well,
they didn't know what you were
if they didn't know, well, correct, but
until you filed the petition, they didn't know what you filed the petition.
Obviously, we served the petition, and eventually they responded.
Okay.
So.
Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel. The case of United States versus Pete is submitted.